refurbished Star Wars is on somewhere. I have no intention of revisiting any galaxy. I shrivel inside each time it's mentioned. 20 years ago, when the film was first shown, it had a freshness, also a sense of moral good and fun. Then I began to be uneasy at the influence it might be having. The bad penny first dropped in San Francisco when a sweet-faced boy of 12 told me proudly that he had seen Star Wars over 100 times. His elegant mother nodded with approval. Looking into the boy's eyes, I thought I detected little star shells of madness beginning to form, and I guessed that one day they would explode. "I'd love you to do something for me," I said. "Or anything, anything," the boy said rapturously. "You won't like what I'm going to ask you to do." "Anything, sir, anything." "Well, do you think you could promise never to see Star Wars again?" He burst into tears. His mother drew herself up to an immense height. "What a dreadful thing to say to a child," she barked, and dragged the poor kid away. Maybe she was right. But I just hope the lad, now in his 30s, is not living in a fantasy world of second-hand childish banalities.
Hi, Danny.
Thank you very much for hanging on there,
Hi,
Gail. Welcome to our HS, a Halloween special. What have you got for us, Gail?
Well, I just want to tell you about my son. I need to set the scene. He's very, very tall and thin with big black eyes, and my neighbour says he looks like an alien.
No, he's very frank of a neighbour. Wouldn't she lean over the garden wall and say, "Gail, that boy of yours, don't take me wrong, he's a bit funny."
Oh, she adores him. I think she's got a bit of a crush on him.
Ah.
But the thing was, when he was younger, he used to sleepwalk.
He
used to come into my room, and he just used to stand and look over me while I was asleep, and I'd wake up, and I'd see these big black eyes, and I visage knives, and I used to actually hold the duvet cover up to my nose, and I would be whimpering.
Of your own son gangling over you, alien like.
Alien boy.
Let me think about that.
Whimper, crying, "James, go back to your room, go back to your room."
And he would. He would, even in the middle of his somnambulism, as we say. He would.
Let's turn on one heel and just stride back out and go back to bed.
Was he growing all the while? There he goes now.
Wow. So I guess yes.
Frightened by your own children is a terrific theme to warm to, but this happened more than once, did it?
It happened a lot. He doesn't do it now, he's older, but the flip side of that, which is the plus, you could actually talk to him in his sleep and get all the answers that you wanted. So
that
he's doing.
Not gibberish.
No, I used to say, "Who are you out with tonight?"
Yeah.
And he'd tell me.
Yeah, but how about this neighbour?
That's great.
She sounds a bit fast, this neighbour. I mean, couldn't you ask him, "So, are you seeing Betty Tonkins or not?" Yeah.
She would ask him outright anyway, but...
What do you say to this Betty Tonkins? What do you say to her?
How old is your son, Gail?
He was 18 last week, Amy.
Right. My daughter's 22 today. Bonnie's 22 today. Gail, how about that? On Halloween, Bonnie's birthday.
I think it's the best birthday to have, other than October the 12th, which is mine.
I'll bow to that, but waking up to find your son standing over you, because the thing is, you open your eyes slowly, and when you see a figure there, it's this kind of noise you hear.
"I'm just going downstairs to sharpen the knives, Ma."
"Go back to your bed."
"I'm just going downstairs, Ma. I'm going to sharpen the knives."
What of in your life?
Okay.
Things you are not best proud of in your life. Here we go. "As an impressionable young teen, I joined an Amnesty International group at school. We were all allocated political prisoners."
I
Robbie Williams' lyrics. I should read them through before they go on the air, but... Okay, here we go. Remember, the subject is, I'm not proud of this.
Yeah.
"As an impressionable young teen, I joined Amnesty International group at school. We were all allocated political prisoners, given stationery and airmail envelopes, and instructed to write letters to totalitarian despots demanding they rethink their draconian human rights policies. 4 years later, I left for university and cleared out my childhood room and found the blank pages, the unaddressed envelopes, the leaflets naming the shackled and impressed I was meant to have championed. 'Thank you for joining Amnesty,' read the welcoming literature I tossed into the bin liner. 'Your letters really will make a difference.' You, Dan, let an old couple stand up for a few tube stops. I don't know what happened to the people I was supposed to be helping." Thank you very much. That's from Rob in Glasgow.
Oh, Rob.
Wow, Rob. That is, I'm afraid, an ink stain upon the soul.
It is.
Trevor, this starts off, you'll get when the tone of this changes, by the way, it changes in the background here, so this is the way it starts. This is about being on television somewhere in the world.
Okay.
If there's a grain of truth in this email, then this is one of the best we ever got. Trevor in Kennington, about being on telly in foreign places. I was in Sydney, Australia. I'd been having an affair with a nice girl I'd met there. We had a wonderful time and a beautiful summer together, but unfortunately, at the end of the summer, I found she'd given me an infection. I thought she should know about this, because plainly she wouldn't have done it on purpose, and I met her in a park, just to give her this bad news. She had no idea why we were meeting there, and came up and flung her arms around me. At that moment, a film crew descended. Before I could tell her what we were there for. Hi, we're doing a thing on romance. Is it dead? Especially in Sydney, they said. And they started filming us. Well, we love each other. She carried on talking, arm around me. No idea of the tortuous facade I had to go through, saying how great it was and how romantic a city it was and how much in love and how much fun we were having. Then they asked us, would you kiss each other for the camera? I declined. But she said, oh, come on, come on. We did, and they filmed us walking off hand in hand. As we walked off into the sunset, still being filmed, I leaned forward and said, listen, by the way, it was shown on television that very week. Listen, by the way, I don't know if you've got a good pox doctor. How's that for romance being stone D? Trying to break the dread news, and a film crew, they do. The descend is not a bad word, I know it's overused, but that's what film crews do. All right, we're doing romance, and of course she turned. That's all lovely, they're featuring us on their program. Scratch, scratch, scratch. That's being on television anywhere in the world.
Yeah, well, it was a few years ago. I went climbing with my dad, and he took me up the Aiguille de Madie on Mont Blanc. It was, he said he'd done the climb before, and then it was all right, you know, we'd be okay. It was a bit of ice climbing involved, crampons and the rest of it.
Okay,
it
sounds very good, yeah.
And we got benighted. The mists came down, we got nowhere near the end of the climb, and we just got stuck.
Yeah.
We just had to loop a bit of rope round a bit of cliff and hang on for the night.
Okay, so looped a bit of rope around the cliff, yeah.
Yep.
What was it looped around? You and your old man, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there we are, stuck on the Aiguille de Madie. And it's getting really cold. And now we weren't prepared for any more than about 3 hours of climbing, so we really didn't have much with us.
We read about you sort of people all the time, putting a strain on the ambulance and fire services.
Well,
there you
my old man had put a strain on the ambulance service several times before. He was always getting rescued off mountains. But, you know, I mean, the writing was on the walls.
What a wonderful thing to be able to say about your father. He was always getting rescued off mountains. That's a terrific thing.
Lots of times. And he always said when he got rescued, I was all right. I didn't need to be rescued.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there you are, halfway up this mountain with something affixing you to the surfaces. And?
Yeah, and as I was saying, we didn't have enough to wear. We were going to freeze. We were probably going to die that night.
Yeah.
But he said, don't worry. I've got one of those emergency blankets with me.
Okay, yeah.
He delved down into the rucksack, pulled out this little thing. This is one of the, like, the aluminium things that people wear at the end of the marathon, you know, that kind of a thing.
I see.
And they come in a little bag about 10 centimetres squared.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was so happy when I saw this. Yeah. I really did think, we're saved.
Okay.
We're not going to die.
No hypothermia. Here it is. One of those things you see at the end of the marathon that we're saved, yeah?
Absolutely. And he pulled it out. And it fluttered away in 1,000 pieces.
Oh, what? It just broke up?
It had just got damp at some point and rotted.
And as he took it out and tried to, boom, satisfying, it just went and he was left holding the two corners.
That was it. A couple of little bits that weren't going to do us any good whatsoever.
And I've got a field recording of your reaction here. Oh, no, hang on a moment. I've got a field recording of your reaction here, ladies and gentlemen. If I can bring the wind in again, I've got the wind machine. We'd like to paint, paint with the sound here. So we'll get the wind up again for you. Yeah, there's the wind.
Yeah.
Right. Now you say, Dad, we're saved.
Yeah.
Go on, say that.
Glad you've got that with you.
No,
you're going to be safe now for sure.
Yes, I'll just unfurl it. There's you. That's you reacting to it. That's Guy and Hackney reacting to it. So eventually, how did you survive? You did survive,
well,
I
had to put my feet in a rucksack. I mean, it really was quite a tough thing. I mean, I couldn't feel anything in my feet for about a year afterwards. I mean, we really did get cold. But then in the morning, when we could see again, we finished the climb. It was only about another couple of hours.
It doesn't matter. It was long. I mean, at any point of the night... I do apologise, Guy. That is so not me in this programme, but I almost said this. At any point in the night, did you think you might blow off? I'm so sorry. I stopped myself halfway through it.
Because you're tired.
It's because I'm tired. Yes, it is. But what's wrong with me?
You're tired.
it struck me as the funniest thing in the world. What have you got there, mate?
Really, even if you're a conga player, and congas, as we know on this show, are pivotal to pop music. One of the greatest congas in the world, in Sandel Belly's Gold. Sandel Belly, what?
No, it's a good song already. It's a good song already, you can hear that. Wait till the congas come, or rather the bongos. Fine song, going round and around. It needs something, and that something is... Was that member of the Sandel Belly did that? So he had a saxophone round his neck for playing the bongo.
Were they bongos or congas?
That's bongos.
How do you know?
Because I'm versed in these things. What's that you're holding up there?
Oh, little inkwell at the end of the desk. That's our old one. You know, when I was at school, they had inkwells on desks.
Did they?
You actually dipped your pen in at the end of the desk.
Yes, really?
Little china inkwells.
Probably. And what did you use them for?
We had biros and stuff, but they were there, and you could request ink, and there was an ink monitor could go. Into the end of it.
Oh, yeah,
you
really?
Proper inkwells at the end of desks.
Well, you know, in the cabinet war rooms, yeah. I don't know if you've ever been down there. Have you ever been down there?
No, I haven't. No. You keep recommending me,
it's
Joe, but I...
It's so amazing. But basically, they didn't have any toilets down in the cabinet war rooms, okay? But they had, like, they didn't have any private toilets.
Oh, right.
Okay, but they had one private toilet that was meant for you-know-who.
Of course.
Winston Churchill. And no one was allowed to use this private toilet whatsoever.
Okay.
And nobody had ever been in there. And then when the war was over and they were kind of, like, clearing up a little bit.
They found some magazine.
Well, they opened it up. And the toilet was there. But you know what else was there?
Oh, I hope you're going to say a cigar was floating. What?
No.
What?
A transatlantic telephone.
Oh, I see. He would sit there and talk to his numbers around the world.
Yeah.
While taking his ease.
Yes.
Oh! Wow, look at that.
Yep. And you can see it if you go to the cabinet wall.
While he had
amazing.
His finger on the button, taking his ease. Well, then, you know, I'm not sure where this leads with a phone in, but that's a terrific thing.
Winston was allowed in there.
Yeah, but please don't call us under certain circumstances. I couldn't bear that.
No.
I've got an automotive story for you, Danny. Years ago when I was living in Melbourne, I was driving home from work on a hot summer day.
Yeah.
And I stopped at an intersection at the lights of a dual carriageway. And I'm sitting there in the front car and the lights in the fast lane. And I decided to take the time to roll a cigarette. So I rolled the cigarette and put it in my mouth and lit it just as the lights turned green. At the same time, I pulled the cigarette out of my mouth. But it stuck to my lips.
I've heard about that. Yeah. Never been a smoker.
I burnt my finger that I was trying to pull the cigarette out, and the thing dropped down into my lap, bounced into my nylon running short. Of course, at this time, my immediate reaction is to sort of clutch at my crotch and curl up in the fetal position, which is what happened. But this thing sort of burnt the nylon, which then sort of welded itself onto my testicles. I lurched out, the car lurched out into the intersection. Stopping traffic in both directions, stalled. I jumped out of the car, flailing wildly at my burning crotch, and proceeded to do a striptease and sort of jump around like a madman in the middle of the intersection. I had horns. I had people screaming at me. There were people. There was almost nose to tails going on behind. It was hilarious.
Were just leaping around in the middle of the traffic, doing this sort of thing. I was like, I'm wondering, leaping around, grabbing your crotch, officer. Honestly, I was. I was searching for a cigarette. I was trying to take the
melted nylon of my underwear and my running shorts, trying to remove it from the afflicted areas.
Let's put both of those together. Hang on. There it is. I fired up a bucket at the wrong time. How was your lip, by the way?
My lip was fine. It just, you know, I probably pulled some skin off, I think, from in hindsight.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It wasn't the most afflicted areas of my person. So
well, I can imagine passers-by, you know, women trying to explain it to their children. Said, well, dear, you've ever heard of a Tasmanian devil? That's one of them. Thank you very much indeed. A terrific story.
Wow, there was a lot in that story.
There was a lot. What beautiful delivery. But here's the thing. The dominoes are tumbling because I thought you were going to tell a lie and send this poor girl back to, you know, Brasilia.
I should have done.
Yeah, what you should have done. That wouldn't have been kind either.
No. But
I was a no-win
situation.
I once met a genuine Swedish girl in Spain when I was about 16, 17. And I don't know, I figured pen friends, I gave her my address. In November, at about 11 o'clock at night, there was a knock on the door of our flat. And outside was this girl who turned up in London knowing no one. And I said, if you're ever in town,
come on
if
in.
You're ever in town. I forgot all about it. Her name's Catherine. And she was on the doorstep. And I went and answered the door. I wasn't going to send my old man, but he wouldn't have got out of bed. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And I said, hello, it's Catherine, you know, from Benidorm. I said, that's right. I said, listen, there's nothing. I just went, no chance. No, my mum and dad, no. Well, is there somewhere I can stay? I said, I really don't. I said, look, wait there, and I want to put my jeans on and the t-shirt. And I walked her to the bus stop at 20 past 11 in Bermondsey, and I said, that'll get you into the West End. But I don't know what the West End is. I said, just bye. Say bye. See you. Bye. Bye. I'm not proud.
Well, how's that worse than what? How is what I did worse than that?
I don't know. Well, because you did it, not me.
I wanted to go on the stage, and now my ambitions I've gotten. In my grey pantaloons I'm the rage, I'm the hole in the elephant's bottom. My friends all think I'm a wit, in their seats in the stalls I can spot them, and I wink at the gals in the pit. Through the hole in the elephant's bottom. One night I had some bad luck. The manager said I was rotten. I happened to get my head stuck.
This is a terrific one, this. This is from Miles in Ealing. It's the cause and effect. It's the cause and effect of, let me find some right music for it. Cause and effect of sleep, being tired, strangely. It says here, okay, Miles in Ealing. He says, my dad used to have a manufacturing jewellery company and used to share a desk with his office manager. Every day after lunch, the manager would take out a jeweller's eyepiece, screw it into his eye socket, and under the pretense of taking a closer look at a particular ring or brooch, would have a crafty sleep. Interesting piece. The shoulders are quite good. What? No, I'm just looking at this piece. He says here, sometimes certain pieces of jewellery will get scrutinised for up to 25 minutes until my dad will get the hump and drop a big book on the table.
What a wonderful thing to do.
Right, what time is it? Good lunch, though, wasn't it? Right, I think I'm just going to have a look at these rubies just for 5 minutes. Oh, give me my eyepiece, will you? Yes, these are excellent, then. What? What? You have? Sorry about that. Yeah, what a terrific thing to do. Put in a little jeweler's eyepiece and have a little snooze.
That's thinking. That's thinking.
That is great. Thank you. You can't touch this. I won't do that. I'll tell you what I've got queued up here. I meant to do this the other week. Jonathan Richman, when he forgets the words. But there are various songs where people... I'm sure we've been to concerts. I can't bring one to mind. Maybe the audience can. Where people have either just fallen apart on stage and lost their way in a song or whatever. But very rarely does a studio album leave in someone who forgets the words. And never to an August song like Amazing Grace. Now you think Amazing Grace, anyone knows the words for Amazing Grace up to a point. But Jonathan Richman, you know, I know he's an eccentric, but he's not necessarily willful. He sings this version of Amazing Grace, and then just, he doesn't know the words, but he figures, ah, the hell with it, I'll just go with this version. So hang on.
Well, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, which brings my joy back again.
That's not the words. That's not the words. And nobody had the nerve to say, Jonathan, do you want to go again on that? That's not the words. But listen, but it carries on then, and it makes it even worse.
Sometimes I've worried so much, felt so lost, but then I always feel found. And I should know by now that grace is something that's always within.
What are you rambling about, Jonathan? Now, if there's any other example either on record or you've seen it in
sacrilege.
Concert, it's a track on the album. You just think, well, if it was a personal version of it, but he seems to be making it up as he's going along. But it's sad you've got to follow that, of course. I may duet with you in your foreign tongue as...
Well, I'll do my best.
I think this week over the Max Bygraves, actually. So, Mark, what have you got for us?
I've got Seen All Good People in French.
I've seen All Good People. Oh my friend. I mean, it just gives me an excuse to say, so the original, which I happen to hand, I had no idea you were going to say.
I have never seen you so excited, Dan. You, like, got a sweat on. You're so excited.
The thing was, I mean, did you notice? I didn't even have to look around. I just leant behind me, and there's my Yes compilation, just waiting to be asked. I've seen All Good People. In what language?
In French.
In French. Well, let us remind ourselves, because I'm sure all the ladies out there going, oh, come on, I was just playing that. But here is the original.
I've seen all good people turn their heads, she stays so satisfied, I'm on my way.
With sweep.
I've seen all good people turn their heads, she stays so satisfied, I'm on my way.
Oh, man, you've got something to follow here, so... There it is, okay, that's the original, that's how it goes. Now, you're going to bring a little more to it than that opening bit, or is it the whole thing you can sing?
I can do the first two lines, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to sing that. Well, you know, of course, you just heard it's a cappella there, so are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready,
okay.
I'm ready.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, Mark in Slough, French.
There we go.
I've seen All Good People. Now, you may be a little late as you come in, I suspect, but here we go.
I've seen all good people.
Where are you there? I can't hear you there. Where are you?
Okay. You did a cappella. That's without any music, isn't it?
That'll be it. Okay, so here we go. And 2, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Rue du Bon Jean, tournant le tête en tout façon. Alors, je suis satisfait, j'ai démarré.
And again.
J'ai vu tout bon gens tournant le tête chaque jour, alors maintenant j'ai commencé.
This is why I love this job. Just because you can get people singing Yes songs in French. Was any accurate there, Amy Lemay? You know this.
Well,
stuff.
I'm looking out at Alice, who also works on the show, and she speaks French, as I do. And we're just shaking our heads at each other.
You were singing the right words there, Mark. They're casting aspersions on your pronunciation and indeed your
I don't trouble with on my way. I use démarrer, engager, and come on, say. None of them sing quite right. But.
But it's got a nice timbre to it, Mark.
I'm patronising you. I think it was bang on. I'll tell you, let's have another go at it. Let's have one more go at this. And this time I'll join you as Max Bygraves. That'll help you out, okay?
I'm extremely concentrated.
Here we go. So you've got to concentrate on your French. And five.
Right,
here we go. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think
all good people
turn
their heads, it stays so satisfied. I'm on my way. Again. I've seen all good people turn their heads these days so satisfied I'm on my way. No, come on, that's a radio first I'm thinking. Bless you, everyone. Thank you very much. Mark in Slough, fluent in French. official theme tune sung Teutonically, and it's odd I mentioned the Hitler moustache. There must mean something kicked me off for a second. So hang on, don't worry about this bit. We'll do this and then we'll come right in with it, and I'll find you another song, because you speak fluent German, don't you?
I'm pretty good, but yeah. I don't know if I can.
Well, I'll find you another song as well to back up on the other side of this, because this is the one you requested, and we will do this, but then I'll find you something else that's a little more difficult and entertaining to sing. But as soon as you hear the drums, in you go. Dim dum bum.
Der einen Sonnenaufgang nehmen kann, in die Taube sprut, ihn in der Schokolade und in ein Wunder umfasst oder zwei. Das Faust ist halt man kann, die Susi man kann, die Susi kann man kann, weil mich der sie mit Liebe und will den Weltgeschmack.
You know, and yet they say German's a difficult language. That was something. I mean, you've really got to get the baton, get to the front of the rank there before the song catches up on you.
Yeah.
No wonder German, even the greatest, even Beethoven, they say before he started his choral symphonies, he would always look across to the, you know, he would always look across at the singers and say, come on now, fags out, here we go, all trying to end together this time. Because it's very difficult, you know, it don't come easy, because they don't go 4-4, the language certainly doesn't. Here we go. Several years ago, during a bloke's holiday in Florida, this is from John in Sandhurst. Several years ago, on a bloke's holiday in Florida, I met a local gal in a club in Florida on the Keys one night. To cut a long story short, that night we ended up alone back in my motel room. From what she had told me during the evening, her father was a bit overprotective towards her. This is a good thing. I've not read this. I'm reading this blind. And told me he often drives around looking for her in his car if she stays out too late. As we relaxed over a cold drink, I was beginning to wonder if we would be discovered at some point and what the results would be. Just at that point, I heard a loud bang and the shattering of glass. My mind immediately deduced we'd been found and the father had taken a shot at me. As we got down behind the sofa, I remember I had put a bottle of beer in the freezer to cool down earlier, and that's all it was.
He thought the dad had come after him.
He thought he was going to be ushered up the aisle in a shotgun wedding.
Looking at the sunrise. Winking in dew. Covered with some chocolate. And a miracle or two.
CK can't keep the rhythm, but that's pretty good from Gollum, wasn't it? That was pretty good from Gollum. Have you ever been on American television? Towards the end of yesterday's show, unfortunately, it was backed up by the next caller, or the caller we had after that. We were talking to the story, and I came to it too late yesterday. I don't know what we can do with it.
Okay.
But it was the best story I read over the weekend, and it was just a sidebar, just a footnote on a thing about lying. There was a thing on the Sunday Times magazine, and this whole thing about liars and lying.
Okay.
And it turns out, you know, it's part of our survival technique. We're only a species that do lie, or so we thought. And it had a photograph of a brain in the process of lying, all kind of electrical storms going on over it. But then on the sidebar, it said some famous liars. And of course, you know, Robert Maxwell was there, and Jeffrey Archer it had them and stuff. And it said these are people who, you know, may have made a reputation for telling the odd, you know, falsehood. But there at the bottom was Guy the Gorilla.
Guy the Gorilla.
London's the classic photo of Guy the Gorilla looking wearily towards camera. And then the sidebar said, Guy the Gorilla was expert in sign language and mastered like 170 words and was a shocking liar. It said one day Guy the Gorilla went nuts in his cage, and tore the stainless steel sink from its fixture and hurled it across the cage. When his keeper turned up to find out what all the fuss was, Guy was now in the corner, sucking his little finger. Thing. And he wouldn't look at his keeper. And then the keeper presented the sink and said, "Well, who did this?" And he pointed to a pussycat. Right, this was in the Times. It wasn't presented as a humorous piece. He said he pointed at a cat that was known to frequent, and Guy the Gorilla said, "Well, I tried to stop him, it was that cat." Guy the Gorilla. I mean, I don't know where that takes us into our show. Oh, well, you're the shocking old liar. That's why I'm reminded of that. Of
This is an email. It's from Anonymous. Please put your names on these things. It has to do with our greening brigade or, you know, fussy rules and
fussy
things
rules
like that.
And that,
It says, at my school in Kent, the head boy was the only pupil allowed to grow a mustache and was also allowed to blow a huge hunting horn that was mounted on the wall in the dining hall.
Wow.
He says, sadly, it was never given so much as a toot during his time there, but he was allowed to do it, you know, the head boy. And prefects were apparently allowed to smoke a standard pipe.
As opposed to, I suppose, a Meerschaum or a Clay.
Yeah,
just a standard. But what school was this, as you say?
He doesn't say school in Kent.
That's the way we've gendered it. That's not a woman's school, is it? Growing the moustache and smoking the pipe. I wouldn't have thought so. Trump records where people pretend to be trumpets of that.
If we'd have lost the war, that's what this station would have sounded like.
Gosh.
That's what this station would have sounded like had we lost the war.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear his Jamaican
Elton John, pre-Elton John era, but nevertheless, he made a good fist. And they said, look, Elton, this is not right for your session. We can't give you 25 quid for this session because we really need somebody from the West Indies. He said, I can do that. Oh, come on, what? You missed my CV? Look, does Jamaican. Here, ladies and gentlemen, Elton John does Jamaican. There we go. It's already authentic through its reggae vibe. Where the rain came through. Well done, Elton. Made a fair assist for that.
He made an effort.
He made an effort. Not many things young, gifted, and black on the same album, of course. I'll bring you that in a second. Here's Steve, our good friend in Basel. And who knew he took time out of his busy, man in black schedule to record for the foreign market? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Johnny Cash in German.
Alle schönsten Boris doch zu Haus und doch zog mich eins in die Welt hinaus und in der Ferne suchte ich mein Glück verkennt den Weg zurück.
Ladies and gentlemen, making a fair fist of it, Mr. Johnny Cash, I Walk the Line in Platzer Deutsch.
Ich schenkte mir die Liebe und der Herz.
Now, I think he's making that up. It's like my Hebrew a moment ago. He just went,
and he got a round of applause. I mean,
no, I gave him the round of applause. That's on here, look.
Terrific story about hiding. You know, sometimes you think, oh, is there any more juice to be wrung from the stone with hiding? There's plenty.
Oh, there's, I've got loads
plenty,
of juice over here.
Plenty more juice to be wrung from the stone. Listen to this. A good 20 years ago, I was living in a one-bedroom bedsit which had a partitioned, which had been partitioned off to fit in a corridor kitchen. At the end of the corridor kitchen was a really old white, a really old-fashioned white plastic shower cubicle, which was never used because in a fight for space with the fridge, it had lost and the fridge had been dumped in front of it. We simply used the old shower cubicle for storage. Well, one evening, possibly out of boredom, I decided to hide in this cubicle so I could jump out and frighten my boyfriend. Well, there I was in place, the shower curtain pulled up when my boyfriend came home with a colleague from work. Dilemma. Could I jump out now? Is this still funny? No. I think I'll wait here till he goes. An hour later, he decides to leave.
See you then. Good night. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, I don't know where she is. I should love to have met you.
But then the colleague says, what's that in the corner? And I hear footsteps. Footsteps coming towards me. He pulled back the curtain, and there I was, by now, curled in a ball in the corner, through sheer embarrassment. It was an embarrassment ball. You should have heard him scream as he pulled it back. I think my boyfriend screamed too. You have brought it all back, and bless you.
Oh, isn't that awful?
I felt the pain.
Isn't that awful?
I crawled up into an embarrassment ball.
You're standing in there and you're thinking, and then all of a sudden, just like in a film, hang on a minute, what's that? please don't come over here. It was the shower scene. It was the shower scene. That's what happened. The main thing is it's snowing everywhere right now. Well, if it isn't in the, if it isn't where you are, and kids, if it's not snowing, go over to your windows now, kids, and have a look outside. Have a look outside, see if it's snowing. If it isn't, it's probably because something you did.
Uh-huh. Living alone. It's always said that London's quite a lonely place, but apparently a report shows London tops the list of people living on their own.
What about what we've done? Do you ever hear in the breakfast show when we did things you've done on your own? We had some of the saddest stories in the world. This one woman, forgive me, I don't know if you ever heard this, Kath, but this one woman said, oh, when I came to London the first time, I didn't know many people, she goes, and after a couple of months, I actually felt a bit bad about it, you know, because I really didn't know anyone. She goes, but I thought, well, come on, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So I went out to the restaurant on the corner. Quite a nice one, little Greek restaurant. And I went in there, and as I walked in, straight away he said, table for one. And I said, well, yes, actually, you know. And he said, the table for one. He said it came with like a card table for me, like a little card table. And he put it amongst all the other tables. And I sat there, and I felt like a sore thumb, she said. And I ate my little salad. And then at the end of it, she goes, I just went up to go to the toilet. And I came back, and I hadn't had dessert or anything. And they cleared me little table away. And I just stood there, and I looked around, and I said, oh, I'll pay my check then. Yeah. He just took my money without looking at me, and I went back to my flat. See, I'm all right now. I've got quite a few friends now, but I'll never forget that because, you know, I felt a bit silly, really. And it was just, they cleared my table away when I went to the toilet. The little car
took the whole table.
No.
Yeah,
I know. I said, toughen up, you old bag. This is London. And Dan, I was driving through Hampshire in very dense fog, and the car just stopped in a village called Stockbridge. I sat there for a while trying to get it to start. Couldn't get it started. So I got out in the dense fog swirling around me to buy something to eat. I could see the lights of some kind of shop a bit further along the high street. I walked along the pavement. The shop just had a light on, but there was nobody in there. There seemed to be another one, further across, as if it was hovering in the middle of the road. I made for it, and I could see a figure looming ahead of me. It seemed quite short, about 5 foot, and very fat. Seemed to have some kind of scarf and hat pulled down over his ears, standing in the middle of the road. Excuse me, I said as I came towards him, and I veered slightly by passing. Excuse me. Then I saw he was actually a brown bear. It was a mannequin dressed up in a barber jacket, scarf and hat to emphasize a country clothing shop. Close up, he looked a bit like Paddington. I laughed out loud. Their laugh echoed down the high street, and an old woman stared out of the shop window. There was fear in her eyes. Thank you very much indeed. The repertory company is in full swing. That's a mannequin story. He said, excuse me, to a stuffed bear. twice and couldn't get away from around him. Right. Here's It Happened in America, which is our catch-all phone in that I want to encourage because it's Thanksgiving Day. We shouldn't be dividing North and South, but that's all over with. It says here, this is from Paul, and he says, a friend and I were driving from Vegas to the Grand Canyon. On the way, we stopped at a small gift shop in Kingman, Arizona. Outside the gift shop was a mannequin, oh, tying in with yesterday's, yeah, sitting on a bench dressed as an American Indian. As we were about to leave, a man staggered across the road towards us, completely and clearly drunk. He asked my friend where the nearest post office was, and she explained that we were just passing through and didn't know the area. Oh, I knew this was coming. So the drunk staggered across to the Indian dummy and started asking it where the nearest post office was. I don't believe this. The dummy stayed mute, so the drunk started arguing with him, accusing the dummy of being snooty.
They can be snooty sometimes,
yeah,
though.
No, but this is from an old Freddie Prinzen film. This is a drunk in a George Formby, this is. Listen, you think you're too good to talk to me, because I've never used drinks. While talking to a wooden dummy, I don't believe that. Balaam, what's that? While drinking one summer evening on Kingly Street near Carnaby Street. Summer evening, drinkings on Kingly Street seem a long way off, no?
Yeah,
they do. Why do we always want what we can't have? Well, during the summer, I'm always saying, oh, what about the Christmas shows? And he gets me a Christmas
show. Yeah.
Anyway, so he says, while drinking on one warm summer evening, I've added the word warm now, the evening in Kingly Street near Carnaby Street, we inevitably found ourselves standing outside, pint in hand, enjoying the glorious long evening sunshine. After a few drinks, my friend and I spotted a woman with dyed red hair having a chat to her colleagues in the Puma store opposite. We kept looking and exchanging glances and indulged in a bit of head wiggling, that mutual indication that we both thought, there's a little poppet, we might have a couple more drinks and invite across. After a while, it became increasingly frustrating she wouldn't show her face, and then it dawned on us. She hadn't actually moved at all, had she? Her colleagues weren't actually talking to her as much, looking straight past her. Yeah, it's a mannequin, but a good one. One of those real lifelike ones that had been bent into such a shape she was leaning on the checkout counter. I mean, you can't really blame us, can you, he says. Okay, so there's our latest mannequin story. He said, though, at the end, he said, P.S., my friend and I actually did agree never to speak of this incident ever, ever again. I've got something for you.
You're going to tell
the worst thing that happens. It's the worst thing that happens to anyone. Even people who said, oh, this is going to be good. Halfway through it, they put their hands up.
What is it? It's probably nothing. It's probably forgot to set the DVD recorder.
Nothing like that. This is, and I know a cliche though it is, even amongst the so-called smart set, it's a Curb Your Enthusiasm, solid gold moment.
Yeah.
Here's what happened to me last night. In fact, I think in advance, I might actually play the, do that for a second and put the back CD behind it, thank you. In advance, I'm going to play this. This is what I'll play in advance. This is how I went to bed last night. I went to bed
What was it? Did you spill a glass of red wine on a white carpet?
Oh, I was that'd be a piece of cake. That's every night of the week. This is how I went to bed last night. Listen to this. That's how I went to bed last night. So what happened is, you see, Sonny's, since we were last together, my son's gone off to university. And he's been gone nearly 6 weeks, and it's his first weekend home.
Yeah.
Before he went out to university, about a month or so before he went to university, he got himself a new girlfriend. I'm sorry I made that sound like taking a hat off a rack, but he got himself a new girlfriend. And we've met her once before, and she's great, she's fantastic. I said, son, this girlfriend's good. She talks and eats and stuff. And so anyway, she came around yesterday, and we had dinner there. And I was up last night till like 1 o'clock in the morning preparing this show. You can hear the fruits of it now. And so, anyway, about 20 to 12 last night, the cab drivers around our way have strict instructions, do not use the bell after 10 o'clock. I mean, Lord knows there's enough of them used. Do not use the bell after 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So about 25 past 11 last night, and I'm thinking, oh, Joanne's still there, she's upstairs, I'm in my office, beavering away, preparing the show you're hearing right now. And at the front door, which is down the hall from my office, I hear... So like you do, I said, okay, mate, be there, because I'm figuring, because I heard him booking the car. Okay, mate, yeah, all right, they're coming, all right. Son, cab's here. Son, yeah, all right, mate, we can hear you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, terrific. Now, I'm sitting there, and I've had a wild week, by the way, and I didn't look like this like half an hour ago. I was unshaven, I just, my eyes were in the hair, forget about that. And I'm sitting with socks and my pants in the office. I don't hardly conjure that up, but why shouldn't I? 25 past 11 in my own house.
Right.
Getting indignant about this story now, trying to retrieve it. So I'm sitting there, and, mate, they're coming. So I get up,
happened?
I get up to the office, and because I can see through the glass in the door, the fella's still standing there.
Yeah.
He's still standing there. And some cab drivers, a little slow, and I didn't have a full grasp of the language or whatever. So I finally go up to the front door and open. I said, they're coming, mate. They'll be down in a second, all right? And he just sort of stood there again. I went back to my office, and I thought, oh, well, I don't care. Cab driver sees me in pants and socks, what do I care? And then I was worried, he's still standing there. And then he kind of edged into the hall. And I thought, well, look, you know, this sort of thing sets in. Okay. So there it is. So I went back out. I said, do you mind? At this point, I hear on the stairs my son and his new girlfriend coming down the stairs. I went, oh, I think your cab's here, by the way, thank you. Not to her, just generally being ironic about this fella's liberty. Yeah. And she went, oh, hello, Dad. I'm standing in my socks and my pants. It's her dad. It is not a cab driver. It is her dad. And I've been shouting, all right, mate, all right, they're coming. I'm standing there in front of his daughter, by the way, in my socks and pants. All right, mate. And he went, hello, I'm Alan. I said, I'm Danny. And then she said, thanks for everything. And I remember going, oh, it's okay. And I'm now trying to be polite society in my socks and my pants.
Oh.
Now, in the unlikely event that these two get married, that'll be a great story on the wedding day, but I don't think they're going to get married. And I think that fellow went home to his wife and said, finally met him, all that stuff about him and Gaza, all true and all, you should have seen the state of... And they shut the... I didn't know what to do. I was such social unease. I stood there with my hands on my buttocks, thinking, do these look like shorts? They might look like shorts.
Can you grab a towel or...
Well, yeah, in the hall. There's loads of towels in the hall. And they went, thanks a lot. I said, and I walked back in my office at that point. I thought, they still haven't gone. There's another minute. I thought, I'll see ya. And they shut the door. And that is when, in my head, that's when it went... And Sonny come round the door and said, what's that about? I said, I thought he was a minicab driver. And I kept shouting at him. And then I looked, and then he walked in the hall. And I said, oh, help yourself, mate. And it was her dad, and he was so nice and polite, and now he thinks I'm a maniac who walks in front of his daughter in the barest essentials. In the barest essentials. Actually happened last night. So I went upstairs and said, what was all that noise? I said, I met Joe's dad. Not like that, I hope. I said, yeah. Oh, you didn't. Ring him up. I said, I can't ring him up and say, excuse me, I'm so sorry about that. It was awkward enough anyway. I don't know. Sonny went, oh, it was all right. I said, no, it wasn't.
Is that the first time you met him?
Of course. Otherwise, he'd say, blimey, then put some trousers on. We'd never met. I thought he was a minicab driver. I had no idea who the fellow was. None.
Latest headlines. I'm Rory Barnett. Good afternoon. The government has been forced to apologise after it was telling the Ian Blair, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, has been talking to the Met Police Authority, in which he's justified the Met policy's shoot to kill. The Met Police's shoot-to-kill policy, I should say. Sir Ian Blair said his armed officers were not trigger-happy. He defended Operation Kratos, the force's policy to deal with terrorists, saying a similar tactic should be used in other cases where a suspect was putting another person's life at risk.
Hello there, how are you doing?
May I have some, you can hear from that, from the applause of the studio audience and just the enthusiasm of us. This is a red letter. This is an absolute pip and a dandy. What have you got for a show?
Well, I'm just telling you about my father. He used to work for Shell, the oil company up in Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a policy whereby everyone in the regions could go and work in head office for 2 weeks with work experience.
Right.
So he was sent down to Shell House on the river.
Uh-huh.
And in his first week, he got called in, and his surname's Baker by coincidence. Mm-hmm. And his boss said, Baker, come in here.
Uh-huh.
And he got told off because he was using plastic-coated paper clips, and people of his grade were only allowed to use the metal ones.
Even better, the best yet.
This is the truth.
And then
the second week, my father was working away, and there was sort of the janitor, sort of caretaker, sort of knocked on his office door, and my dad was like, well, what are you here for? And they were moving his desk, and I'm not joking, they moved his desk 2 feet, because my dad had two legs of his desk on the rug, and again, he wasn't at the senior enough grade.
To be on
his
the
desk
rug?
On the rug.
Oh, what business was this? Shell Oil?
Shell, yeah.
Man, this is good stuff. Joe, I only a couple of years ago, and we played them this week, strangely, I went to Norwich as guest of my stormy wife from the early 80s, and we got up there, and Delia said, Danny, I've got to go and do some things, but I'll leave you in the ballroom. There's some drinks over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Charles left in the ballroom, and I wasn't in a suit and tie or anything, but there was this kind of green room, and one corner of the green room had a rope across it, just two of them, all ordinary silver things with a rope across it, a yellow rope. And I thought, oh, the drinks are on that table there. And I went and got myself a drink and poured it. This is a bottle of beer, and I poured it, and I stood there. And they come around and say, excuse me, what are you doing? I said, I'm with Delia, right? I've come to get a drink. Well, you've got a drink. Could you go that side of the rope, please? Now, the area, as you said, was about 18 inches. And I said, and anyway, these four or five guys came in and all got the other side of the rope and got their drinks and all stood there very visibly on the other side of the rope. And good evening, everybody. And how are you? And everyone was doing this. And I wasn't allowed that side of the rope. But I still think that your two legs on the rug is better. Yeah. And the paper
clip. Well, the paper clip.
Absolutely true. Absolutely
well,
true.
Bless you, Joe, because that it really is something. Now we're getting somewhere. What are the other minor rules out there? You know, even if the era is sadly passed. Remember, we are all in favour of this. Now, the thing is, on the show, we can't have a Joe without another Joe straight behind it. We have to keep the other Joe on the phone until another Joe rings up. And that's happened now, because here comes Joe.
Now the nurse is on the paper. Have put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Eraticus. Was just passing by. Now the boys have put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Eraticus. Was just passing by. Fascinating witches put the scintillating stitches in the britches of the boys who put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Eraticus. We're just passing by. Now the fascinating witches put the scintillating stitches in the britches of the boys who put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Eraticus. Fascinating witches put the scintillating stitches in the breeches of the boys who put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the harem of the court of King Eraticus. Because it's too late! Because they've just...
What? Huh? Come on, what? Come on! You try that. I'll play it again in a minute. You try it.
Are you really enjoying the ultimate in sausage products? You are if you're buying Wardinsky's. If you haven't tried Wardinsky's bologna, wieners, liver sausage, Polish sausage, to name a few, make the switch today. The extra special taste appeal of Wardinsky sausage comes from the finest quality ingredients. More cuts of whole fresh meat and costly imported spices blended with loving care to Wardinsky's time-honored recipes to find sausage products for wonderful taste appeal, for superb quality. And your family will praise you for it. Wardinsky's fine sausage products, made fresh daily right here in Buffalo, are proudly sold by better food stores and meat markets throughout Western New York. Now remember what we always say. Don't give me that baloney. I want Wardinsky.
Well, it was about 25, 30 years ago. It's the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with my father when I was a kid, and we were driving from South London where we lived, mm-hmm. or Pimlico where we lived, down to Brighton where my granny lives, to mm-hmm. see my granny.
Okay.
And it was a little days where you happily pick up hitchhikers, you know.
Yeah, before the embargo and before everyone.
Exactly.
We were all going to be murdered in our beds. Copyright.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were at a sort of junction south of the Vauxhall Bridge Road,
mm-hmm.
and there's a guy sort of with his son. Like, we pull over and Dad leans over and goes, where are you going? And it's a very thick Italian accent, not much English. He goes, I am going to Brighton.
Uh-huh.
He says, well, you're in luck, my friend, because we are going to Brighton as well. So well, hop in and off we go.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get much out of him for the next hour and a half, because he really doesn't speak a word.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're pulling up to the famous seaside town, my father says, well, exactly where do you want to go? Because, you know, we know the place very well, so we could have dropped you at the house or whatever, or
mm-hmm.
just dropped you at the bus station in the middle of the town. And he pulls out a card of where he's going. It's an address of where he's going.
And it is?
It is Brixton.
Yeah. Do you know what? Even from your mangled Italian accent, I recognise Brixton. What were you thinking of at the time?
I was thinking you said Brixton.
Why would he... even in the poorest accent, my friend.
No, if he'd read it off a card, he didn't know the niceties of the English language. He just said Brixton rather than Brighton.
So that's what you said to him at the time, was it? Or did you just kick him out and put your toe down?
No, he just said, just down there on the left, mate.
And off he went. Hang on.
Yeah, we were pretty proud of ourselves first for picking him up, but you know, less proud for dropping him off.
Well, if you a little lesson in Italian. That says Lewisham High Street, anywhere you can drop me. This is about the moments you just burst into tears that you can remember from your youth and think, I must have been very sensitive as a child. Who says here, Nelly, I went really, really big style when John Noakes appeared on Wogan. Okay, he justifies it. Stay in there, everyone. This is somebody who says he started crying when John Noakes was on Wogan. Here we go. Actually, that's too bright, that music. That's our poetry music. Here we go. Hang on. I went when John Noakes appeared on Wogan, and right at the start of the interview, John announced he had been contacted by Shep, the dog's owner that day, and so, oh, he was always saying Shep died that day.
Oh, no, come on.
How many times did Shep die? Hey, that's Gary, I think you might have fallen for the old showbiz, folks. I want to share something with you at the top of this interview, so don't be mean to me. I can't believe that he announced it on Wogan. I think he announced Shep's death regularly over about a period of 30 years.
Are you mocking his tears?
No, maybe it's a good memory. It's a lovely memory.
Anyway, well, it was.
He said he maximum blubbed, but I've got a caustic eye on that one. If anyone back us up and tell us if Shep actually did die either on the series Blue Peter, but I do used to think that. I know this is wrong, and I know there is a graveyard still at the back of Broadcasting House, which is testament to the truth.
Yeah.
But I'd like to run a few tests over that graveyard and open up a few of the old caskets, because I used to think, hang on, I haven't watched Blue Peter for a while, and nobody had, and then the headline would be there, one of the tortoises had gone, one of the retrievers had gone, I think they use their deaths of their animals politically. I would like to unearth
Danny.
A few of those beers and see if there's anything in them.
Danny.
Come on, let's open up the tomb.
No, you can't do that.
And see if there's anything down there. You know what you'd find in there? Nothing but a contract. That's all you'd find.
Cold heart you have.
No, I don't believe so. I think if you opened up the Blue Peter graveyard, it'd be Christopher Tracy's. There's one for the teenagers. And there are more lyrics in that vein. Now, Jason, everyone has pulled their cars over to the side of the road saying, come on, this has got to be hit. Who do you think it is, Jason?
I've got a feeling it could be one Sidney James.
Lovers. Yes, it's a Sid James record, everyone. It's Sid James in lover's mode. Oh, yes, it is. You'll never think of Sid the same way again. Obviously, for one point in his life, he said to his agent, you know, there's another side of me. James Reckle. Bear with me with this. It's all worth it.
Blimus!
We had a love, they said, but now it's melted in the snow. Just goes to show you don't know where you are.
Jason, how on earth did you come up with Sid James?
It was the old favourite of the show, Dan. I've been listening for years, and of course, Carry On. Everyone's seen Carry On.
Yeah, but you know, I hadn't heard this record till yesterday. And maybe, you know, I said it's an old friend. You're a genius, that's what it is. Just have a little more. Hang on. There's that saxophone in the middle. Well, I'll tell him what he's getting again. I haven't got it, but I haven't got that. But you're going to bring us Gimme, 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 A Man After Midnight in Catalan.
No, in Spanish.
I thought that was the same thing, right?
No.
Ooh. Huh?
You'll get in trouble if you
like,
say that.
Isn't it like New Zealand and Australia or Canada or America?
No.
It's basically
no,
the same
two
thing.
Separate languages.
Oh, well, yeah, that's what the Welsh say, but let's face it. Here we go. Joe in Barnet with Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Okay, can you sing me the backing bit just to get me in?
Now, what do you want? So you want...
I want diddle-you.
Is that it? Diddle-you, diddle-you, diddle-you. Diddle-you, is that it? Diddle-you, diddle-you, diddle-you.
Leading up to the chorus, so it's something like, won't somebody hear my prayer? Can't you do that?
Okay. So won't somebody hear my
my prayer.
Okay. Yeah. Dame, dame, dame un hombre esta noche. Unfortunately, I can't.
No, but it doesn't matter. At first, it was worth all the build-up. Now, what's the bit I'm missing out here? Somebody hear my prayer, and what do they say after that?
I don't know, because I don't know the song very well. I can't.
No, you don't speak Spanish at all, then?
No, no, I do. I speak fluent Spanish.
But then you shouldn't have said that. We could do Black Knight, you know. But how come you guys... Oh, we don't know the words. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. How about if I said to you, let me take you by the hand and lead me through the streets of London? How about that? You could do that, couldn't you?
In Spanish?
Yeah.
Yes.
Go on, then.
Do you want me to sing it?
Yeah.
Déjame conducirte... No, déjame cogerte por la mano y conducirte por las calles de Londres.
Oh, God, there's plenty plenty there. And I'm not letting you go that easily. Now we know we've got a fluent one here. How about Gilbert O'Sullivan's Claire? Do you know that, Claire?
Yeah.
The moment I met you, I swear.
Okay, this is the tune.
It's Claire, I've got the tune set up. Claire, the moment I met you, I swear, I felt as if something somewhere had happened to me. That's all you need, really. So hang on, we'll start.
Okay. Clara, el momento que te conocí, te lo juro.
Beautiful. This is the best thing we've ever done. Thank you very much indeed, Joe and Barney, who not only fielded one, not two, but three songs there. Should have done Black Knight, that'd have been it. I'd have dumped Gwen and gone over to live with her. Because that's there, you've got the long winter good. Evenings will absolutely fly by. As recorded, of course, by
Tony Basil.
Of course, Tony Basil, the choreographer. Hey, Nikki, in Swedish, something of a radio first. It's Ingrid in Barnes, it's all yours.
Okay. Hej Micke, Micke, åh Micke, Micke, du är helt okej. Hej Micke, hej Micke. Åh Micke, Micke, hej Micke, Micke, du är helt okej. Hej Micke, hej Micke. Åh Micke, att du inte fattar hur det är. Varenda gång jag stannar så vill jag du att det är. Åh Micke, att du inte fattar hur det är. Så se på mig Micke. Och kan du se Micke. And that's it.
No, what do you mean that's it? That's plenty. We're a gog. She's a Twitter. I'm a gog. Wow, that was something. I mean, we were grooving on that. Why that wasn't recorded in Swedish in the first place, I think, is one of the great cultural crimes of the 21st century. It's a wonderful thing. Now, this is how we extend it. We now play you. You don't know Hawkwind's Silver Machine, do you?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Let me find something here. Hang on. Stuck in the Middle with You, that's going to be no good. Our Last Farewell, that'd be something. Oh, that'd be difficult. This town ain't big enough for the both of us by Starks. How would you say Holly came from Miami, Florida?
Holly come from Miami, Florida.
Hitchhiked her way across the USA. Would you know that a bit? Hitchhiked her way across the USA.
Listade sig igenom... And the last
thing? He tracked away across the USA.
Yeah,
and on USA. Okay, so here we go. Hang on. I'm going to try this. Now, when I say Q, when I say now, you say Holly came from Miami, Florida. So you say that. Now.
Holly come from Miami, Florida.
He tracked away across the USA.
Listed say again on USA.
Plucked her eyebrows on the way.
Plockade sina ögonbryn på vägen.
Shaved her legs, then he was a she.
Rakade sina ben och sen var han en hon.
Oh, hey babe, come on everyone, take a walk on the wild side. Come on, in Swedish, you're not going to get that anywhere else. Bless you, thank you very much indeed, Ingrid. And she's called Ingrid as well. When? I'm doubly not coming home now. But imagine her whispering in that ear at certain times. I mean, there's nothing better than hell. Surely Ingrid whispering shaved her legs in your ear in Swedish. Both of them are now on the phone to other people. Probably other radio shows stealing our ideas as we go.
Sure.
I'll tell you, if anyone can do the Ballad of John and Yoko in any language at all, I would love to hear that. I mean, I can only sing it in Max Wygraves, as you know. I can do it at a pinch of sweep. That's the other language I can speak. I know I spoke another language. I can do it as sweep.
You can speak sweep.
I can speak sweep. Any song you want, I can do a sweep. You know that. Let's have a think about it. Let's have a look at it. Sweep singing Fire and Rain, all right? James Taylor's Fire and Rain by Sweep. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Footy Show, Sweet sings one of the most poignant ballads of the late 20th century. Anyway.
Amanda. Thank you very much indeed. Well, it's not easy. It's not easy doing Sweet and Fire and Rain.
Yeah.
Well, no, of course, that's how it should. It's a beautiful song and beautifully sung. And you can see his little arms out like that. And, of course, at the end of it, he'll twirl around twice and faint like that on the desk. Thank you very much indeed. Sweet singing Fire and Rain. Here comes Martin Slough. As kids, we were all taken to some hellhole on the south coast to stay in a caravan. My mum took us to the beach and we collected loads of cockles and winkles. We left them in the sink, in a bucket, and went to bed. When we woke up, the winkles had all crawled out of the bucket and were all over the walls and the ceilings of the caravan. Still oozing and seething out of the bucket, there seemed to be 1,000 times more of them than went in. They were breeding, spelling out on the walls, "We live." Actually, didn't write that bit. He said, we saw them all over the walls and the ceilings of the trailer. I reckon if we joined all the dots together, it would have made a picture of an elephant bouncing a beach ball. But I've got to say, you know, welcoming Amy back is something I've been looking forward to for a while now. I'd like to welcome her back in song, if I might, just for a second here. So if you'll indulge an old showbiz professional, I just want to say,
you know I can.
That in there just to make him feel bad. Okay, here we go. Come on, everyone.
You came along just like a song and brightened my day. Now who'd have believed that you were part of a dream? And now it all seems light years away.
Everyone, come on, you know I can't smile.
You
staying in a climbing hut already. I don't know if this is being inside things or get blowing away, but anyway, he says, I was not staying in a climbing hut high up in the Alps. In the Alps?
Where are the Alps now? I know I'm from Tennessee, but where are the Alps?
The Alps. I was not staying in a climbing hut high up in the Alps. And we'd hung our socks on a rail outside to dry. A resupply helicopter arrived, and the downforce from the blades blew all our socks into the air with a great swirl. Most were never recovered, including mine. I had to climb down in inappropriate socks. You see, that's a class action waiting to happen there.